Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is Pat.
This is Wayne.
This is Johan.
My name is John.
And this is Chris.
All right, and we've got joining us today a guest who may not be a household name, but he is a household archetype, at least here on Fear the Boot. We have a genuine furry LARPer with us. Go ahead, Jim. Say hi. Don't be bashful.
Hey, this is Jim.
It's too late to chicken out now.
Yeah, right. You don't sound like you're wearing your mask.
That's because I have a headset on. Besides, they don't talk when they have the masks on. It would ruin the magic.
You say they. Do you not have a mask?
No, I actually don't wear one. I have enough problems with heat that wearing a fur coat all the time would pretty much kill me.
Yeah, it looks pretty freaking agonizing, like social dimension aside.
I have to ask what I think everyone's thinking. What kind of animal are you?
Well, I have a fox persona that is basically limited to a cartoon character on a badge that I wear at a convention.
You use the word persona, so you don't say the word costume or outfit or anything like that.
I mean, most people who are in the fandom have a persona that they portray. They don't all wear costumes. The things are damn expensive.
Yeah, I imagine like a full setup like that. There's got to be $1,000, maybe even $2. How do you get into character if you don't have a costume?
All right, well, hold on a second. I got to back through this.
I got big questions here, Dan.
Yeah, I got a ton of questions,
yes,
man.
We'll get to these questions, but first, we're going to take these in some kind of a cogent order.
Yeah, whatever.
Okay, so well, let's
go for it,
John. Let's see what I just showed.
So let me back this way up. And okay. Say that on Fear the Boot, no matter, you know, what kind of jokes we make, I think one thing we've got a pretty good track record with is we let people from all these different subcultures come on, you know, and say their piece. And we did the thing with LARPers. We let Pat on the show. So
yeah, but you never let him say his piece. So
that's true.
I don't know if that counts.
Yeah. Pat, shut up. So, Jim, let me start with this question. Listening to this show, what made you want to come on here and talk about this?
I actually just enjoy your podcast. I'm a big gamer, and that's sort of where I came to both furries and also to LARPing. I started as a tabletop gamer, and I listened to your show, and it's hilarious.
So what made you decide one day you wanted to dress up as a fox?
I actually don't dress up as a fox. I think that anthropomorphic characters are pretty cool. I came to it, like I said, I came to it out of gaming, out of role-playing, you know, different characters. I will confess, and I think this is far more embarrassing than being a furry, I like rifts.
Well, it's been nice talking to you tonight.
Wow.
We've got to have to go.
The things that don't come out in screening.
Now, I thought it was a cool setting when I was, you know, in high school. And they had these wolfen characters and whatever else they had, and I thought they were cool.
You talking about the dog packs?
There was wolfens as well.
Oh, there was wolfens. Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know,
out myself?
You did. Maybe you're a furry too.
He's kind of
a big fan of Werewolf the Apocalypse when it was new, and that's sort of how I came to meeting this group of people.
You said that earlier. You don't have a costume. So what aspects then do you wear that then qualify you as a furry? I mean, is it just ears, or do you have like a little, like, you know, furry nose? What's the deal?
Well, I'd like to ask a more foundational question than that.
This is a foundational question.
Well, I want to know. So
I want to know Chris's answer.
Barb, but let's demystify this a little bit. As sure. A furry, what exactly do you do?
I mean, it's principally a fandom. It's not all that different from most aspects of ordinary sci-fi fandom. It's just very sort of tightly focused. And it's a little different from, I guess, like Star Trek fandom or Star Wars fandom, where, you know, you might dress up as a Klingon or a Stormtrooper or something like that, because there's not a pre-existing IP.
Those are all tied to genres. Mm-hmm. What is the genre then that you're essentially tied to? Or is there even one?
There are a lot of IPs that sort of bring people, you know, into enjoying this fandom. What they're sort of trying to do is create for themselves an alter ego that lets them express part of their personality.
Give me an example.
Okay. I guess it was a few episodes ago, you guys did a talk about otherkin.
Okay.
And, you know, not all otherkin are furries, not all furries are otherkin, but if you look at the Venn diagram, there is some crossover. And a lot of the things that you guys said about why people get into this, and really they apply to furries too. People get enthralled with or interested in certain, you know, certain personality traits that they feel that this character embodies, and they want to explore that.
I may be overly complicating this. Well, let me see if I can draw something of an analogy here.
Okay.
And I'm going to out myself on something here. It's not directly related to furries.
He's an elf.
But
I've heard that about him, actually.
Several years ago, I was friends with a guy who was very much into Native American religions.
Mm-hmm.
I realize that's a category of religions, not a single religion. But one of the things that he did, I don't know, for me, I guess we'll call, is he tried to work out what he thought my totem animals were. Mm-hmm. And he had a whole process he went through whereby certain aspects of my personality would be reflected sort of in these archetypes represented by an animal. And there's more to it than what I'm describing here, but I'm just trying to keep this real high level. And even within role-playing, for example, if you take a game like Shadowrun, within the shaman there, they talk about that if you're a shaman of a particular totem animal, you are supposed to reflect certain characteristics of how that animal is viewed socially. That if you're a cat, you want to keep yourself clean. That if you're a dog, you're very close to those around you. You know, each one has all these different aspects. So is what you're saying is that it's something kind of like that. It's maybe not religious per se, but it's a way of expressing yourself using an animal as an allegory?
For a lot of people, yeah. And there are actually a lot of people for whom it is something of a spiritual experience. I don't know a lot of people who are into that side of it personally, but I do know that they're there and they have a fairly robust subgroup of the community where they get together and they talk about these kind of things, where they say, you know, they have kind of an animal totem that they like and that they try to emulate.
Where do furries meet? Is this in a basement thing or out in a restaurant? Or
it depends. I just came from a convention. It's here in the suburbs of Chicago. We had about 2,500 people, and it was basically a sci-fi convention, just sort of where everyone was focused on furries. People get together, really, you know, there's meetups, people go to parties, you know, how do geeks get together? I mean, really what it boils down to is furries are a bunch of nerds like a lot of others, and they look for social outlets.
So you mentioned the spectrum. Where mm-hmm. would you place yourself on that spectrum?
In terms of what interests I have in the fandom or sort of...
You talk about people who are express certain aspects of it, some who are others. And certainly within gaming, it's the same thing. And you're trying to equate that to gaming. So you personally, you know, where do you fall in that?
Basically, where I fall, I mean, most of my involvement is actually related to putting on this convention. I've been on staff for this convention for years now. And most recently, I run a gaming track. I don't know if you guys do a lot of general purpose fan conventions, but they have programming tracks. You know, you've got videos and whatever. This convention has gaming, and that's what I've done for the last several years. So we try and put on games that either are just really popular. I mean, Rock Band is a big draw, and then we try and put on games that are sort of more thematic. So you have stuff like a lot, you know, some Steve Jackson games have like, you know, cartoon animal characters on the cards and things like that.
So how do you advertise to the furry community? How do you get that word out that this convention caters to it, that if this is something that you do, you're not going to be made to feel uncomfortable coming in costume or in persona?
The internet basically made this fandom possible. Contrast with, you know, things like Star Trek fandom or another group that I'm in with called the SCA, which I think you guys talked about briefly on your LARP roundtable.
Yeah, right.
The furry fandom's very new, maybe 20, 25 years old tops. And it's really sort of taken off because of the internet. People congregate anywhere where they can talk to each other. There's a lot of MUD type chat services. A lot of furries still use Second Life. I think they're the only ones who do. You know, a lot of furries play WoW. Basically, anytime you have some kind of technology that lets people who might otherwise feel marginalized and isolated get together and talk to each other, a lot of furries are going to use that. You know, we have meetups and mailing lists for people who live in areas. And a lot of the same technology you guys use on your forum, furries use as well.
So when you go into a new community like that, let's use our forums, for example.
Mm-hmm.
How quickly do you out yourself as a furry, or do you? I mean, our community, well, us in particular, have had a long-standing history of making fun of furries because we're a marginalized group. They're an even more subset of marginalized group. It just happens.
On the geek hierarchy, I believe furries are lower than gamers, yeah. So we can totally ride your ass.
That's right.
Right. No, I've seen that, and yes, they at the very bottom are the what was it, the furry Star Trek people, furry Star Trek
fans. And Kirk is an ocelot or something.
Furry Star Trek fanfic writers, I believe. Yeah.
Or Kirk is an ocelot.
Erotic furry Star Trek fanfic.
Yeah,
where
exactly.
They write themselves into their character, and Kirk is an ocelot.
You know, if I'm going to a furry convention, it pretty much stands to reason that I'm a furry, or at least interested in finding out more about these folks. You know, if I'm going to log on to like a furry chat forum, you know, everyone there is already part of the community. You're not really outing yourself. Just
well, I mean, if you go to a different kind of geek community, like Like I said, like our forums, for example, our forums are not typically thought of as a furry forum, even though everyone has an animal avatar just about at this point.
Right.
Do you hold that in reserve? Do you, I mean, do you avoid mentioning, hey, I'm a furry? Or is that something that just never comes up?
I personally don't care. It's part of my personality. It's something that I'm interested in. If it comes up, I'll mention it. It's really just a question of whether it's relevant.
You don't necessarily suffer from furry shame then, essentially.
No.
I mean, like, you know, the furry equivalent of gamer shame.
You know, I was that kid in high school who got picked on because he played D&D and was on the fencing team. You know, we're all adults. What else are people going to do?
I don't know if I'd want to pick on somebody who's on the fencing team. That just seems like you're inviting disaster at that point.
Even more dangerous now, he'll sue you.
Yeah,
yeah, that's true.
Fencing team and a lawyer.
And, you know, I got to say, Jim, that while I'm not necessarily part of the same subcultures, as a gamer, I have reached a point where basically I've looked at my life and said, you know what, at now 34 years old, I am too old to care who thinks I'm cool anymore.
Exactly.
I still have some of those kind of feelings where I'm sitting there and I'm about to post something related to Fear the Boot or whatever on Facebook. I'm like, oh, but I've got coworkers or I've got people I went to high school with that I'm friends with. Do I want them seeing that? It's like, no, screw it. If they can't handle it, you know, tough. I don't give a damn anymore.
Everyone knows that I'm on a gaming podcast, or I'm on a comic book podcast, and there's no risk of anybody mistaking me for cool.
Well, and
it's not going
to
happen.
Well, but and my point here being, though, I have to say that I respect the fact that, first of all, you've gotten past that point of worrying about who thinks you're cool. And secondly, I also have to say that, and I hope our listeners or anyone commenting on this show will take this same attitude, that whether you're part of the subculture or not, I have a lot of respect for the fact that you are willing to come on a show that has a history of lampooning that particular subculture and actually truly engaging us, talking to us, not
getting mad and fighting with you guys.
Not getting mad and fighting, and also on the flip side, not, you know, running away and hiding in a corner. I mean, the fact
sure.
that...
You know, because we were essentially, no pun intended, almost, but we kind of poked a bear every time we make fun of, you know, furries. And so it's good that you're not lashing out at us, essentially.
And we know that some LARPers got mad at us for all the LARPing comments for a while.
Oh, God, yes.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, to take a Danism. So here's the thing. The people you make fun of most are yourselves. So obviously, not a big deal. You guys rag on each other all the time.
That's a great way to look at it.
That actually is a really good and also very accurate way of looking at it. All right, so let me get straight to the issue that probably wants on a lot of people's mind, which is the sexual aspect of it. If you go onto the internet and you type into a Google image search furry, and
you're going to get a lot of porn.
You're going to get a lot
shocked.
Of, yeah.
I can see on his face.
Yeah.
Pat is doing it right now.
Sexual aspect of furriness? Wait a minute.
Pat's
hold on. I've got my phone.
Pat, so, I've been in your room. I've seen the cat girl costumes.
That's true.
Yeah, you know, I've seen this statues. There's no doubting that you know there's an aspect.
So here's my
first one that comes up, unleashthefurry.com. Is that a good website?
I have no clue, actually.
Well, we'll find out.
Click on it, and if I hear screaming, I'll know the answer.
Yeah, so, well, Pat's getting the FBI to show up at my house.
You're moaning, so.
So here's my question. Obviously, there is a sexual aspect to it for some people. Is that a common thing? Is that something you feel that is pervasive within the subculture? Or is that something you guys look at as that guy? Or is this fairly typical? Is this...
For a lot of people, it's a fetish. I mean, like anything else. I remember the first time I was at Dragon Con, I went to the wrong hotel room and it was a Klingon fetish party. And that bothered me a lot. But, you know, whatever. It's their thing's not my thing, but their thing is okay. And that's sort of the attitude most people try to take about it.
We found something to put under that hierarchy. Under the furry fanfic writers, the Klingon fetish partiers.
At least you didn't walk into a Ferengi circle, Umox.
Wow, I have no idea what that means. And I don't think I want to.
I don't know, I kind of like the sound of that.
They'd be rubbing each other's ears. I don't know what's worse. You came up with the concept, or I can picture it in my mind. I hate you for that, John.
Rule of acquisition number 9. Never trust a Ferengi who makes no time for Umox.
We have a set of geek rules, and the first geek rule is always don't visualize. Wayne, you broke it, and you suffer for it.
That is true.
Well, furries are people, too. They like to have sex.
Right.
And like many geeks,
but they're geeks, so they don't get to.
Right. So instead, they turn to have sex with each other. To sort of talk about LARPing for a second, one of the big events I go to for the SCA is called Penzic. we call you and your 10,000 of your closest friends. And sort of the other tagline for Penzig is, if you can't get laid at Penzig, you're doing it wrong. it's one of those things that happens.
Yes, there is consex.
So, you know, do all furries view this as some kind of fetish? No. Do a pretty substantial number of them do? Yeah, absolutely.
When you sit around and talk about the culture in general, within the furry culture, you certainly seem very, you know, tolerant or understanding of the whole thing. But when you talk about it, do you feel that in certain ways it's damaging the acceptance of the culture as a whole? Because certainly, to draw an example, when we talk about gamers, you know, it's the really sweaty guys with the poor social graces and the bad hygiene that we always, yes, we poke fun at them, but at the same time, they are sometimes the problem and part of the reason why, you know, role-playing games and gamers in general don't get accepted as well as they do. Even though once you get to know these people, most of them, pretty good people. Is it similar in that aspect when it comes to that whole sexual aspect of the furry culture?
Oh, absolutely. Look at sort of the way it's been portrayed in TV and in the media, and you understand why the fandom is actually pretty camera shy as far as organized media are concerned. They've been portrayed in TV shows as bunch of sex-crazed perverts.
Speaking of sex-crazed perverts, for the guys not here in the room just listening on the mic, Pat here is still searching for furry porn here on his phone and is holding it up for all of us to see every time he finds one.
Don't you guys still have a Gmail account where everyone used to send furry porn?
That's Chad at feartheboot.com. So anyone out there that wants to send it, Chad at feartheboot.com. So
I think the only mass media presentation of the furry culture I can think of.
Cat girls.
No, it's the CSI episode.
Yeah, I was going to say the exact same thing. And I never saw it, but I saw enough of it.
There was a CSI episode. There was an ER episode.
Speaking of that, I just happened to see on Spike today, 1,000 Ways to Die, there was a segment on there that dealt with furries. And this one guy, he was high in the desert. He came upon a group of furries in the desert having sex. And he tried to get his way in there, but of course he's, you know, just dressed normally. So they kicked him out. And being high, he stumbled in the desert a little bit, ran across an actual bear, which then proceeded to kill him and eat him.
Because he was trying to have sex with it?
Because he tried to have sex with the bear because he was
right, okay. So that's the important part that you missed there, Chris.
Well, I was getting to that.
You were old and forgot. We know.
The moral of that story is don't feel up a bear.
Or the moral of the story is, like, if you're like Pat, don't try, just do.
But remember the bear that was that guy in The Shining? That's a creepy scene.
But so getting back to like the CSI episode as an example, even watching that, once again, not as a member of the subculture at all, mm-hmm. I kind of saw a lot of how gamers are portrayed, where every gamer is shown as a mouth-breathing jackass sitting in mom's basement arguing about whose wizard's better. They've got these people. It wasn't just they had a fetish or even just a strange fetish. I mean, they were absolutely out of their minds. These were people who could no longer distinguish between persona and reality. And
the way media portrayed furries back when they were doing the CSI episode and all of those things is really very similar to the way the media portrayed role-playing gamers back in the 80s. Instead of being satanic cultists, they were sexual deviants.
That's very true. It's very mazes and monsterish.
Yeah, exactly.
And along those lines, let me ask a very blunt question. One of the things that people might say makes this a sexual deviation is the fact that in many ways it smacks of bestiality. And I'm curious how a furry would respond to that.
Honestly, it depends who you ask, but most of them are going to say this is fantasy. It's a fantasy. It's just like any other fantasy where one partner or both partners put on a costume.
Let me go back to the aspects thing that you had mentioned in the beginning. Say you when you're talking about being a fox and that, when you're in that mode, or when any of your other furry companions, I guess, are in that mode and they're whatever animals they are, how do you portray that? Is it mannerisms? Is it voice? Is it just certain personality quirks?
It depends. Speaking only for myself personally, but since it's on Fear the Boot, it's obviously the universal truth.
It is now. Or it's about to be.
And all of our opinion.
Yes.
I came to sort of identifying with the persona because I associated it with parts of my own personality. So it's a little sort of the opposite of what you're talking about.
How do you portray that aspect? So do you just come up and just have to say, hey, I'm a fox, and then you just like talk normally, crack a beer? Or if you encounter anybody who's a hound, do you run away from them?
I personally don't, but then again, you know, I carry a sword around at conventions, so I'm not really afraid of anyone.
Out of curiosity, does this persona have its own separate name? Or
Yeah. Well, it's basically my forum handle is what I use for most of my online personas.
So you call it Pat?
Yes. Yeah. I didn't. Yes, Pat me down. Pat is secretly my sock puppet.
That's right. And by puppet, he means. But anyway.
But sock you really don't have any aspects then that you portray personally to those observing you that you're behaving in a manner befitting a fox. In essence, you just behave normally. What you're saying, and maybe you just have some costume things that just are just part of that persona, but you don't necessarily exhibit any behaviors or things that might identify you as a fox. Am I getting this right?
Yeah, I mean, I have badges that I wear that sort of have a small picture of the character that I portray. For me personally, that's about the extent of it.
Now, I think you sort of hit on something that I'm interested in. Like you said, you wear the badge, and that's kind of the extent of it for you. Now, is this like sort of the other genres, well, we might say, where there are certain strata of what people do? Like, are the people that dress up in full costume, are those considered to be the hardcore guys? Or is there any manner of that those people sort of look down on the minimalists, we might say? Or is there any of that, or not really, or what?
I call it a subgroup. Furries are not a unified fandom like Star Trek or anything like that, because there's not really sort of a single activity that everyone sort of shares an interest in. The idea of anthropomorphic creatures is a pretty broad umbrella that encompasses a lot of different things. You know, I came to it through gaming. Other people come to it because they're artists or writers. You know, some are costumers, and that's what they do.
Okay.
I have to ask on the whole sliding scale here, if you're on one end of the scale where you have basically badges you wear and things, what is the craziest, most out there thing you've seen? What is the thing where you look at someone and you say, wow, we all have that in all of our hobbies?
Look up the tiger guy on Ripley's Believe It or Not. That is the weirdest thing I've ever seen. Yeah, I've met him.
Really?
Yeah.
What's he like?
I was in a theater. We were watching a production of The Lion King, and he saw me and the people that I was with, and he comes over and starts talking to us. And, you know, I'm here at a theater. I'm wearing I'm dressed up and wearing a suit, and there's this guy talking to me, and eventually he goes away, and this lady looks at me and goes, is he part of the show? And all I could say was, not this one.
But yeah, he's going to kill Mufasa here in a minute.
Yeah, I don't think it's really too hard for me to picture or to understand that there's different ways of approaching this fandom, because I can look at gaming. There are people that are into the role-playing. There are people that are into the tactical aspect. There are people that like the mainstream stuff or the indie stuff that all look down on each other for a variety of, quite frankly, really trivial reasons. And then certainly you also have the people who represent the hobby in a more negative or more positive light. There are some people where you meet them on the street, unless you talk to them about their hobbies, you'd never know they were gamers. Then you get the guy who really is horribly smelly and lives in mom's basement and thinks he is his elf.
And I've seen the documentaries on the people that do have the surgeries to make themselves look more like these animals they identify with.
I think it's a very fair point to say that the reasons why someone might get into the hobby or what they get out of it once they're in could vary radically. And so, you know, I can certainly see how for one person, this might just be some level of role-playing. Whereas for somebody else, it does become a really intense personal or sexual or whatever fetish.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. People who produce art or people who build or perform in these costumes can become very popular. And some of them are very cool. One guy who builds these costumes builds in things like night vision systems and hearing enhancements so that you can at least theoretically perceive the world more like the animal.
Does he have a bat costume?
I don't know.
Does he want to borrow Wayne's?
Hey, if he puts the night vision in the ear, you know, the enhanced sound, sure, why not?
Now, I have a couple other questions for you. The first one would be, now you've mentioned that you have the fox persona. Do you have other personas? Because, like, you know, for me as a role player, I role play many different characters. So do you have other animal personas that you do? Or is it just the fox?
I personally don't. A lot of people do. For some people, the costume creates part of that persona. And so different costumes have different personality traits. It's sort of like putting on a character.
And then my other question was, because we sort of started this off, it talked about furry LARPing. And mm-hmm. you had mentioned, like, at conventions, you run a game track and whatever. What exactly is furry LARPing? I mean, is what kind of games do you guys play? I mean, are there ones that are specific to, like, as in being a furry, or is it just you guys are furries, but you're sitting down and playing, like, Shadowrun or Deadlands?
Both. I mean, I'm a furry and I LARP. I personally don't know of any organized LARPs that are specifically targeted at furries. I do know that some of the large organized LARPs do have anthro characters. Nero, which is one of the big foam weapon LARPs, and some of its spin-offs have characters that, you know, like cat people or whatever, and when you show up at the event, you've got to have makeup and a costume that identifies you as what you are. So if you're an elf, you have pointy ears. If you're a cat person, you've got, like, a tail and so on. As far as games at conventions, I haven't put on a LARP at a furry convention or participated in one. You know, we do a lot of board games because it's, you know, at a convention, you don't really have a lot of time to sit down and run lengthy RPG sessions. But there are RPGs specifically targeted at the furry community. Mouse Guard is sort of the newest awesome one that's very popular with furries, obviously, because you're a mouse with a sword.
Uh-huh. So let me ask you another question. If there's one thing that we geeks are good at, it's semantic navel gazing.
Oh, absolutely.
I realize that trying to draw some sort of very thin line between furry and not a furry is about as useful as trying to figure out whether a bunch of little girls playing house is role-playing or not. But the question I have for you is, going back early in my role-playing career, there was a great game, it was an indie press game, where you played anthropomorphic or therianthropic or whatever you want to call them characters.
Justifiers?
It was indeed Justifiers.
Yep.
And I played in that, I believe, Komodo Dragon Man or something to that effect. And now in our current game, it's a D&D 3.5 game, we've mentioned multiple times on the show that I'm currently playing a gnoll. And mm-hmm. I've got a voice worked out for him and mannerisms worked out for him. I mean, I don't have any costume that I put on. There's no...
Dan, are you asking if you're a furry?
Well, I'm not asking per se if I'm a furry, but I guess I'm more asking to him, accepting the fact that this is semantic navel gazing, where would you say the line is between someone who simply has some interest in an animal or has some kind of character they play that's therianthropic in nature, as opposed to you've crossed the line into being part of the furry fandom?
You know, it's hard to say. And it's if you ask 5 people, you're going to get 20 different answers. You know, as far as I'm concerned, like I said, this is just my opinion, which will now soon to become gospel truth. It depends to me on how you choose to identify yourself. Is this an interest for you just within the context of this other activity, or do you have sort of a broader interest in it?
Has anyone questioned your furry credentials because you don't wear the costume?
No, but that's because I help put on the conventions that they get to go parade around in.
And he's a lawyer. He just sued their ass.
I've got a question for you. This is probably more semantic navel gazing, but I'm curious. You mentioned that your choice of a fox as a persona came from personality traits that you saw within yourself before you really entered into the furry community. Do you think of your persona as an actual separate character that you step into when you go to a convention? Or is it more that is a part of yourself that you only get to show when you are around other furries? So is that a separate character, or is it really just you?
For me, it's more of a character. For some people, it's a very inherent part of their personality. Like some people like to pretend that they're a vampire. Some people really think they are. And you're going to find people at both poles and somewhere and everywhere in between.
We call those people Waynes.
Yeah. And you know what?
Yes. Chad, I never thought Chad I was a furry, vampire.
So I think he's a furry too.
Chad is furry.
Yeah.
I thought he was a Sasquatch otherkin.
He always wears the costume.
Chad, do you have a sweater on all the time?
Yes, he does.
He does.
He does. He does indeed.
Oh my God, he does.
Yeah, you should see him at Gen Con back in the hotel room. Oh my goodness.
That rake that Carla was using earlier, he needs that.
Never have I ever wanted to mow a lawn of a human more than when I'm with Chad.
Yeah. It's amazing. There's small woodland creatures living on Chad's back.
Back when I was in high school, we always carried combs in our back pocket, and I just wish, you know, looking at him at his back, I'm like, damn, I wish I had my high school comb.
Or a pick.
A comb? Well, or
maybe
a
weed whacker.
Yeah, one of those industrial garden rakes with the really thick teeth on it.
I want to get, like, my hedge shears, you know, the trimming.
You know
things.
How we need to advertise Fear the Con 4? We need to carve a Fear the Con 4 logo into Chad's chest. Just
there
cut out all the fur around it. and have him stand on a street corner, just standing there. No yeah, one will not look at it. It's like a train wreck. You don't want to look at it, but you can't help it.
Yeah, but nobody will attend is the problem.
That's true.
So, all right.
Come on, Chad. You can raise money for the convention charity. If it hits a certain amount, you'll wax your back.
You can do locks of love off of any portion of his
That's
body.
True.
All right, so
there's no love in that.
I will put the challenge out there. If someone ever does a Justifier's LARP and supplies the costume, I will so participate in that.
It would be really expensive.
Oh, it would be. I loved that game. That was a great game. It's real unfortunate. Kind of, you know, it disappeared pretty quickly. So let me ask you another very open-ended question. And once again, I realize I'm painting with a very broad brush here. But you've got an opportunity here to speak to several thousand people. As a furry, what is it you would want to say to them? I mean, what kind of message is it that you guys have that you don't think is getting heard by the public?
If I had to say anything sort of PR related, it would probably be look in the mirror before you rag on someone not in good humor like you guys do. Think about the kinds of hobbies you have and what people thought of those when you were in high school.
Along those lines, has anyone tried to do it like an intervention? Have you had friends come to you and say, okay, this is too much?
Not really. People kind of make fun, but it's what geeks do. You know, people I know that aren't, you know, sort of within geek circles, they kind of wonder what the deal is with me. But, you know, I'm the guy who's got the action figures on his desk. So they just figure, okay, that's Jim. He's kind of a nerd.
Are you married?
No.
Let me ask you, do you have a significant other?
Yes. We've been together for about 8 years.
What do they think of this?
Is she a furry?
He actually is. He's actually one of your listeners.
Oh, okay. Well, what's his name?
Dave Cat, DaveQat.
Dave Cat. Okay. Well, hello to Dave Cat.
Cool.
I think you guys have talked. He's emailed you before about stuff.
He's in on the culture as well, so it's not really a discussion that you guys end up, you know, having, like, you know, oh, you're doing the Fox again. All right, whatever. It's nothing, you know, nothing like that.
No, it's just sort of a thing that it's just a common interest. So really, it's one of many.
Did you guys meet through furry, or it just happened to be a coincidence that you guys both, or did you get into it after you met?
No, we both came to it separately. We were introduced to each other by a mutual friend who found out that I was moving to Chicago and said, hey, I've got a friend there. His name's Dave. You should talk to him.
Cool.
Where does he fall on the furry scale? Is he a costume person, or like you, does he just have a persona and he does buttons and things?
He's sort of the badge and buttons convention staff kind of guy.
I remember back years ago when that guy was doing that, I don't know, totem reading, or I have no idea what the proper name for it would be. But when he was going through that process with me, I remember very certain character aspects that he drew upon or looked upon to say that he thought this was why certain animals sat at different points of the totem. And drawing down that similar, once again, I realize it's not a perfect metaphor, but I'm curious that you say that you have sort of a Fox persona. That's one of the characters that you have, or one of the personas that you have. What sort of personality aspects made you gravitate towards the Fox or identify with that sort of persona?
Well, when I was growing up, I was the smart kid. Traditionally, in folklore, foxes tend to be intelligent. They tend to be cunning. They rely on their wits rather than brute force. And that was sort of me. So part of it was aesthetic. I think they're, as far as the real animals go, I think they look really cool. And that's sort of how I came to them. You know, obviously these are personality traits that are sort of ascribed by people to the behaviors that they observe. You know, real animals aren't actually like that, but there's this mythology around them. And that's where I found my interest.
Have you ever seen a really out there animal? I mean, we've talked about foxes, cats, things like this. They're,
oh, yeah.
You know, what you typically think of. What's the strangest animal that someone's associated with that you've seen?
A cockroach.
Oh, wow.
Wait, what?
Whoa. Why? And did they costume?
No, thank God.
They just like crawl around and please.
I've got to get one thing out of my head just so I can sleep tonight. Please tell me this one wasn't a sexual fetish.
No, it wasn't at all. It's just sort of the personality. It's the badge that he adopted. Possibly the coolest one that I've seen was a manticore. This was a ridiculously detailed costume, and this guy actually did go all out on it.
Okay, but in that case, I'll come back to the cockroach here, Mix. I'm not done with him. But in the case of the manticore, now here you have something a little bit different in that this is a purely fictional creature. You know, this is not something where you can What'd you say?
Lies.
Lies. Oh.
He believes in the manticore.
This is something where, you know, I mean, you can't even observe this in nature and presume or ascribe traits to it. I mean, do you feel in some way that kind of illuminates something about the hobby? The fact that, I don't even know where I'm going with that exactly.
I don't either, because you can totally ascribe traits to them. They've got 8 hit dice. They've got tail spikes with a range of 60. Sorry.
As far Carry as on. This particular, you know, suit was, it was a costume that someone bought because it was cool.
Was he at Gen Con 2 or 3 years ago?
Might have been.
Because there was somebody walking around Gen Con, I think it was not this past year, not the year before, I guess it was 3 Gen Cons ago, who was walking around in an unbelievably well-made Manticore costume.
Might have been.
And so I wonder if that happened to be the same person or not. It was a great costume.
You know, a lot of Fraser are also fans of games and everything else. Like Gen Con's a big event.
Furthering on what you're talking about, the Manticore, I guess to further what Dan was sort of saying, is that mainstream or accepted in furries to portray the fictional animals that don't exist, like the Manticore, or say to do like a satyr, like, you know, like a pan type of a creature, something that really isn't in the real world? That's all cool too. It's not sticking hardcore. No, you've got to be a real world animal, a rabbit, a fox, a cockroach.
You know, there are no rules around that. I mean, people pretend to be dragons and werewolves and any number of things.
Out of curiosity, are superheroes a big draw for this community? Because the more I sit here and think about it, as you're talking about taking on personas of, you see these traits of yourselves in the animals, if you look at a lot of superheroes and supervillains out there in the media, you know, in like comic books, movies and such,
they're anthropic.
Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. Spider-Man, Rhino is a villain. I mean,
Batman,
Beast exactly.
Scorpion.
Is this something
he turns into animals? I mean, he's like the ultimate.
Is this something that's been noticed by the furry community? I mean, a role-playing game that's a superhero.
A lot of furries are into comic books too. There are a number of sort of small publishers that print their own comics. Some of them are superhero related.
I got to back up to this cockroach person. So when I was asking you about the fox, I at least had some wild idea, excuse the pun, of what I might hear. What the hell makes you look in the mirror and say, damn, I'm a cockroach?
They read Kafka.
I have no bloody clue.
They eat poop and don't die?
I mean, that's simple as that.
They want to survive a nuclear holocaust?
That's exactly what I was thinking. In a post-apocalyptic, I mean, a roach would be a badass.
Yeah.
Their name is Gregor. That's all you need to know.
I have no idea what motivated that particular person to select this as his avatar.
How did he play out these characteristics then?
He really doesn't. It's just... I don't think it's possible.
Did he just do this to be kind of a turd? And
just pull your legs.
People's face and then ignore it and go have a drink? If so, he sounds awesome.
There was one particular incident where someone had gotten out this giant foot and they were chasing him through the hall. And that was hilarious.
That is funny. It's the Monty Python foot.
Yeah, I don't know if I said this on the show or not. Did I tell you guys about the funniest thing I saw at Gen Con this past year? They had that, and I don't remember if I said this on the show, so if I did, listeners, I apologize, but this won't be the first story I've repeated. But they had that whole red box set up right above the exhibitor hall where they had like the cover of the red box, but it was like 12, 15 feet tall.
Yeah, it was three-dimensional.
The photo opportunity.
And it was three-dimensional where they had the dragon actually coming out as some kind of a sculpted creature where you could, you know, grab a sword and shield and pose like you were fighting this dragon that was coming out of the page. And on the last day at Gen Con, I was walking past and somebody put peanut butter in its mouth. Let me ask you something else about the furry community, because as you're sitting here describing it, there's another very loose parallel that I've kind of noticed when I look at it as compared to like the RPG community. One of the things that I've seen within the RPG community, and I remember this myself, the first time I went to a gaming convention in 1992, as far as I knew, Chad and I were the only two gamers in the world. And the first time we were sitting there in a convention with several thousand other gamers who accepted what we did and encouraged us to be nerds and all this stuff, that I suddenly felt so accepted. Here's people that weren't going to judge me. And I think the fact that society so harshly judges them kind of drives them to think a little deeper and to be a little bit more accepting. But now we're digging on this geek hierarchy to a subculture of a subculture, you know, or what, however you want to look at it, going down to furries. Do you think there is a level of acceptance amongst furries that may not exist even within gamers, or do you think there's still a lot of strata and judgmentalism that's sort of inwardly focused, or maybe even outwardly focused, and maybe even they look down on everybody else for not being a furry? I mean, I don't know. I'm curious to understand this.
That there are people who behave that way. Yeah. I mean, there are absolutely people who feel like they've been ostracized by the larger community and only hang out with other furries because, you know, damn it, they're the people who understand me. And, you know, I keep talking about high school a lot. And honestly, you know, a lot of people never really get out of that mindset. As a result, you know, I think as a result, sure, you know, you find people who share an interest that you have, you're going to naturally want to associate with them. They don't make fun of you, or at least not, you know, not to the same extent. And they like the things that you like.
That's one of the reasons there's even a podcast here to be talking on, is kind of the same concept of you find people you want to hang out with. And
yeah.
All talked about this at work, this show would be really boring.
If y'all talk, it would be like, go shut up. It basically shut up and go back to your desk. there are furry podcasts, too. There are a lot of them. Look them up sometime, and you'll probably learn a lot more about it than, you know, I can tell you here.
On the furry podcast, do they make fun of gamers?
Probably. I think they make fun of almost everything. It seems to be about 40% of what podcasters do.
So out of curiosity, we've had some misconceptions going into almost every topic that we've had a guest host on. What is the biggest misconception someone's come to you with about being a furry?
Probably the costume sex. They're like, so where's your costume? And I've heard it enough that it at this point provokes sighs and laughter. Not everyone has one. It's not a requirement to identify, you know, with this fandom. And you know, it's not even something that everyone wants to have.
Before we started recording, that was one requirement I would have thought of for a furry. When someone says furry, the first thing I think is the costume. I never imagined that there were people that called themselves or identified with being a furry that didn't have a costume.
Yeah, I fall into that same category.
I think for me, even before the costume, it would be that it has to be something sexual. It's the yiff.
See, and I don't get that at all. I mean,
you can dig out that old Gmail account, you'll get it.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, no.
That's what I was going into this discussion thinking, like, you know, Star Trek is its own IP. You know, Star Wars is its own IP. Even within fantasy, there are conventions that largely harken back to King Arthur and to J.R.R. Tolkien. But it seems to me that when I look at the furry track on the con pamphlet, half of it is like, come watch furry hentai. The sexual aspect seems so pronounced over there that I wonder, like, does this quite line up with what everyone else is doing here?
I think, honestly, it's probably just a matter of a fact that when you're wearing a giant dog costume, you stand out more.
That is fair.
Yeah.
You know,
unless you're at the pound.
Probably, yeah, there's that. There's any number of pirates or Klingons or, you know, elves, but someone wearing a 6-foot-tall German shepherd suit, you're going to notice.
Yeah, I guess for me, it's just I don't think sex when I think animals. That's the farthest thing from my mind.
Well, I don't think sex when I think animals.
You mentioned
think sex when I think like yiff.
Yeah, and you mentioned like hentai and stuff. I associate that more with the sexual aspect of anime.
So what are you trying to say? You do it human style, in other words?
Well, no, I see.
Wayne is more into tentacles than claws, I guess.
No, I don't like anime at all.
Well, and I'm trying to think back.
To really,
I like German porn movies, actually.
Did someone get killed in the background there?
Someone overheard what I just said. And was like,
but I see what John is saying, in that if I think back on my own life to the first brush that I had with something that I would loosely qualify as furry, it would be Annapurna and Unipuma from Dominion Tank Police. And, yep. You know, these were anime cat girls. Mm-hmm. And they were unquestionably there as sexual titillation. That was unquestionably their role.
Yeah, I guess for me, when I look at that, I think that's just anime. I admit, I'm not an anime fan. I tend to have that aspect of anime as the part that sticks out to me most, is the over-sexualization of a lot of it. I know that's not all anime, but that's the first thing that jumps into my mind. Just like you guys are saying, when you think furries, that's the first thing that jumps to your mind.
Right, but I think kind of reemphasize...
I think sports mascots.
Well, sort of reemphasize or reiterate John's point, is that there's a lot of people within geekdom that I've talked to who, exactly as John said, they look at the track of what's going on with gaming and everything else. And is there some sexual stuff in there? Yeah, but it's the very much exception. Most of it is stuff. It's based on entertainment. It's based on imagination. But if you get over to a furry track, an example would be when John and I were in New York, that convention had a definite fandom track. And if you look down most of the fandoms, it was, we're going to play a game. We're going to watch a video, nothing R-rated or whatever. It's just all, you know, very subdued. But if you look over the furry track, the percentage of events that had some obvious overt sexual overtone to them went from, you know, 1 or 2 or 3% up to 60%, 70%, 80%.
Yeah, I had the same thing at Gen Con looking at the anime track. They had the hentai cafe and things like that. I mean,
the follow-up question would be, you know, when was this?
This would have been, what, 2007, John?
Yeah, this would have been about 3 years ago.
Like I said before, it's a fairly young group in terms of the general age of fans. And when you've got a lot of teenagers and 20-somethings, particularly ones who feel like they've been marginalized for a lot of their lives, it's going to happen.
Well, do you see that there's been sort of an evolution or a maturing of the furry subculture? I guess what I'm trying to get at is, like, if you look at what role-playing and gaming has, where it's come from the 80s, mm-hmm. you know, it's gotten better. That's kind of what I mean. Have you seen anything like that?
Or the opposite.
Oh, yeah.
It really depends on where, you know, the demographics of your group. A lot of people, you know, who have been around for a while, they're now sort of the fandom establishment. We're all complaining about, God, these kids are so young. What the hell? I've seen that at a number of different conventions, furry conventions and otherwise. It's like, man, where did all these kids come from?
You know, I'm 25 and I feel that way when I look at, like, the Naruto kids.
That's a problem a lot of hobbies don't have, though. I mean, when you look around at the role-playing conventions, there are kids, but they're usually not a bunch of 20-somethings that are at these conventions. So if you actually are getting more people into your hobby that are younger, you're doing better than many of the hobbies that I'm involved in.
That's true. There is a sort of donut hole between, like, 16 and 30.
And 35?
Yeah.
Like I said, it really depends on the demographics. Most of my friends in the area are my age or older, but I don't have a lot in common with high school kids. I have nothing to talk to them about. So, you know, I don't associate with them, and they don't associate with me.
We talked about costumes a little bit. For those of you who don't have costumes, is there a lot of heavy makeup usage? Do a lot of people just make up their face?
Some people do, and some of it is just sort of like carnival face paint. Some of it's really very, very elaborate. There are a group of people who that's the type of costuming they like to do.
Do you find yourselves hating the Na'vi people now?
Because we do.
Does anyone?
They really came on the scene big time when Avatar came out, and there was all this attention immediately paid to them. Do you see a lot of Na'vi?
I actually haven't. Not at a furry convention. I've seen them at sort of general sci-fi conventions. And, you know, they don't bother me because, like, I mean, that could have been me and my friends in a few years ago in a different setting.
So do you guys have any Wookiees?
Yeah.
Is that a popular one? It'd be a bitch to talk to them, wouldn't it?
Yeah, not really, but they're out there.
What about Juggalos? When you guys all getting painted
oh,
up?
Oh, God.
What if you guys, like, wound up in the same place? Would there be a fight?
Are you kidding? If you guys stumble into some Juggalos, I think there would be, like, a gang war fight. Somebody would be dying.
I would pay money to watch that.
The closest I've heard of was, I think it was last year, a bunch of furries and a bunch of Trekkies got together and had furries versus Klingons bowl off.
That's cool. That's cool.
Furries lost because they had giant gloves on.
Well, Jim, I want to thank you for coming on the show. You know, I've got a lot of respect for the fact that you were willing to come out and talk about this. It's been enlightening. Some of the stuff I knew, some of it's a little bit of a different angle than I've looked at before. And I guess what I would say to our fans, the people listening, is whether you agree with this, disagree with it, are completely in love with it, or completely revolted by it, I hope you at least, you know, extend the respect that our community is known for to Jim when you come by to comment on the show or to comment in the threads. Because, I mean, like I said, him coming out to talk to us about this, especially given our history with the furry community, you know, it took a lot of guts. And so I really respect that.
I would say this is the first piece of our history with the furry community, because up until now, it's been completely blind insult lobbying, but good-naturedly so.
Yeah, ignorant mocking.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, and this won't be the end of the completely ignorant mocking.
Well, and no, and, you know, maybe now we'll have some, you know, informed mockery.
Yeah, absolutely.
Help us focus our mockery.
There you go.
So as for the rest of you guys, thank you for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.